This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
Who knew Robert Plant would be the youngin' that I saw in concert this summer? Unbelievable. Somebody who is far younger than I, Ross Martin, Inside Carolina, at Ross Martin underscore IC, joins us now on the Adam Gold Show. North Carolina has named a starting quarterback. Mack Brown decided he wasn't going to play too, although I'm not saying that Jacoby Criswell won't see some time. But Ross Martin, talk to me about Drake May, sir. How are you?
I'm good. What's up, Adam? Yeah, it was kind of weird. He went through the whole depth chart before finally naming the quarterback. So the whole defense, he went through too deep. The whole offense, too deep, offensive line, and then named the quarterback. And then was like, and I'm not taking any questions on it. And obviously, we still kind of ask questions or try to ask questions to kind of get him to talk about it in a certain way that wasn't really asking about it. But Drake May will be the first quarterback out there on Saturday night against Florida A&M. I think we will see Jacoby Criswell at some point, especially in that first game. When, I don't know. But it seems like they're going to go with whoever can, score and move the ball. And if Drake May struggles, I don't think they'll have a quick leash. But I think they have a very capable backup in Jacoby Criswell, and they're more than willing to play him. And I think they will play him at least against Florida A&M, maybe App State, and maybe Georgia State before maybe settling on a guy against Notre Dame. But Drake May's a starter is the news out of the press conference.
All right, so I have questions about why would Mack go through the entire two deep, leave the quarterbacks for last, throw that out there, and then say, I'm not taking any questions on it. Why even bring it up and still say we have an or situation? Both guys are going to play, and then, we're basically status quo. What? That just seems odd to me.
Yeah, I think a couple theories here. So I think they – I asked Mack that. I said, why are you naming a quarterback if you're leaving it kind of open in terms of situation if Drake struggles or something? He was like, well, we wanted to give the media, we wanted to appease y'all, which Mack plays a media game like that.
Right.
But I think there's a sense of wanting to keep a backup like Criswell on the roster, not wanting him to transfer. I think there's sometimes if you talk too much and take too many questions, you say something maybe you regret. And I think they really like Jacoby and think he's a very capable quarterback. And I think in this day and age, at the most important position, if you need two, especially with how often, they run quarterbacks in college football. So I think it's a sense of, look, Drake's the guy right now. We want to keep Jacoby happy and keep him around. We'll announce Drake, but we're going to give Jacoby maybe a shot if Drake struggles. Also, there's a sense that it was kind of weird. Both Phil Longo and Mack made the point of, look, the quarterback is one of 11. Yeah. We're going to rotate. We could rotate them just like we rotate running backs or wide receivers, which is kind of crazy because obviously the quarterback is the most important position on the field and weighs way more importance than a tight end or a running back or wide receiver.
Yeah, Steve Spurrier got away with it. But in general, if you do that with quarterbacks, it's because neither one of them has essentially demanded that they be the guy. Ross Martin from Inside Carolina is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. You were there for his recruitment. You followed him as a prep. So if you could, for the uninitiated, explain the difference in styles between the two.
Yeah, so Drake May is your prototypical quarterback when you kind of look at a quarterback made in the lab. He's more of a pocket guy. He's tall. He's about 6'4". He has a lineage. His dad played quarterback at UNC. His brother, obviously Luke May, was a star basketball player at UNC. He's very accurate. He's not going to be some athlete that's shifty. Now, he can run. He's athletic and mobile, but he is kind of a pick you apart, be accurate, stay in the pocket, make your reads type guy. And look, we haven't seen these guys play. They played, a couple of 20 snaps against Wofford last year.
Right.
So the accuracy is the big thing coming out of high school. About Drake May. And remember, he was a five-star kid who committed to Alabama and Nick Saban before flipping to UNC, once Matt kind of got settled and Sam Howell was flourishing, they kind of re-recruited him, and that's when he flipped his commitment to UNC. So a highly talented guy. I think he ended up being a 24/7 Sports Composite four-star, but was a very highly talented guy. Jacoby Criswell, shorter, 6 foot, more stout, a very more physical in terms of maybe you know, lower body, upper body, can run strong. Now the big thing about him is every player says he has one of the strongest arms they've seen. Mm-hmm. So has the arm strength. And you know, they like him. Phil Longo recruited him for 3 years. You know, first at Ole Miss and then at UNC. He was the player of the year out of Arkansas. He was an SEC recruit on multiple levels. So they like Jacoby Criswell. And it was a very, very tight competition, which I think is why it's just like it's still kind of almost seems a little bit up in the air even here Monday, you know, 5 days, 6 days away from the opener. But Drake May is the guy, the name we got coming out of this press conference.
Ross Martin, before we let you go, two things. First of all, Carolina playing in week zero against Florida A&M. I actually think that these would be good games to play as exhibitions as opposed to actually having them on your schedules. You can still have them. You could play guys you weren't intending to play that you were intending to redshirt, although even redshirt rules are somewhat relaxed at this point. I'd love to see every team play a game like this because there's no pressure on it. Doesn't matter really what happens. And you could also give a check because the argument is that we cut a check to the FCS. It helps them balance their budget. You could still do that with having these games not count. Josh Downs is certainly going to start at wide receiver, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's good because he was named second team preseason All-America by the Associated Press today. Who are the targets other than Downs? Give me an idea of who Drake May and at times Jacoby Criswell are going to be throwing to.
Yeah, with Antoine Green out, the names to watch are Gavin Blackwell and J.J. Jones, Kobe Paceauer. These are guys who have not caught many passes for UNC, right? Because last year it was the Josh Downs show, and then Sam Howell ran the ball a lot, and Ty Chandler ran the ball a lot. But I really like the freshman, Andre Green Jr. He may not be as much of an impact player in the first couple games, but he's going to be a stud at UNC. So in a year or two now, when he's an All-American, Andre Green, you'll know where you heard it first. But those guys have to step up, and I think it helps to have Josh Downs and some reliable tight ends, a guy like Bryson Nesbitt and Kamari Morales. But look for a guy like J.J. Jones, Gavin Blackwell, and Kobe Paceauer to step up behind Downs. And they need him. They need a second and third wide receiver to give that new quarterback someone to throw to.
Also, run the ball. Just run the ball. Oh, who's left at running back, by the way?
Yeah. The starter is going to be D.J. Jones out of Fayetteville. He's been in the program now for, I think, 3 years. So he was named the starter today. Behind him, there's just a – they couldn't name a clear number two. So you got Caleb Hood, who's been injured. You got Elijah Green, who's been injured.
Yeah.
Two freshmen, again, Amari Hampton out of the Raleigh area, I think is a Johnson County kid, and then George Pettaway out of Virginia. Those are two stud freshmen who I think will be stars, if not this year, definitely down the line. But those two guys, Pettaway and Hampton, are going to be the names to know maybe at the end of the season. But DJ Jones is a starter.
Ross Martin, Inside Carolina, at @RossMartin_IC. Thank you very much. On short notice, by the way, yeoman's work on your part. I appreciate your time, man.
I appreciate it, Adam. See
you. You got it, Ross Martin. Good news for the Drake May family, and we'll see what happens. Again, I love these games if you can play them without them counting on your schedule. Because if they count, and this is one of Carolina's 12, I hate these games. I get the charitable element here. We help. These games help schools like FAMU and others because they're buy games. You give them a check to show up. You'll pay, I don't know what Carolina's going to pay FAMU, $1 million to come play this game, especially in a season where you're playing twice on the road at Sunbelt teams. I get it. What I don't really like is that these games count to your schedule. We shouldn't be playing these games. We shouldn't have games like a major league team isn't scheduling a triple A team. and counting it on their schedule.
Yeah.
They could lose that game.
Potentially.
But it doesn't count.
Yeah, the Canes aren't playing the Charlotte Checkers.
Right, exactly. So we got to, by the way, Canes and the Norfolk Admirals.
Yes.
Re-upped their affiliation agreement. So
ECHA.
Their second team in the minor leagues. Chicago Wolves, obviously their top farm club, but the second one is the Norfolk Admirals. And they could just continue their agreement. I love playing these games as long as they don't count. And I think that people will still go because you get a chance to watch at least some future players play. Adam Gold in studio with my man, Coach Pete DeRuta with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We're talking retirement and coach. I'm a simple guy, but I like colors. Tell me how I can color code money and get ready for retirement.
I like colors too. I like pictures. Colors. I like graphs. I don't like just a bunch of words. And so what we try to do is we try to break down all those words on your statement, all those numbers into three colors, red, green, yellow. People are amazed when they come in, and most of their money is in the red category.
Yeah, I don't want that.
Now, red means high horsepower potential. It also means high loss potential. So you have to, it's a give and take. You can be willing to do that or that. Yellow means liquid money. You can get it any time. It's not going to earn anything. Green gives you safe growth, but also gives you lifetime income. As we get closer to retirement, we need some green accounts. We need the green zone, we call it. In Baghdad, green zone was important. Green zone's important for you, too. The next 10 people, Adam, it's a $1,000 value. Golden ticket we're going to put together for you, your very own total plan that has a green zone.
It's a traffic light. I hope it's green for you. 800-661-7383 or text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuta. And we are headed to the final 6 weeks of the big league season. There are some enormous leads. The Dodgers, if I'm not mistaken, have an 18-game lead in the NL West. 18 games! Didn't the Padres make a bunch of trades to stay close? Anyway, Elliot Johnson, my friend, former big leaguer with the Rays, with the Royals, with the now Guardians, and of course, the Atlanta Braves, joins us on the Adam Gold Show. Do you know how many times you faced Max Scherzer in your career?
No, I'm going to say 10 times.
I've got you 2-for-2 with an RBI against Max Scherzer.
I'm batting 1,000 off of him?
That's what I have. According to Stathead on baseballreference.com, I've got you 2-for-2 in your career. But like, I don't remember the game, so... we'll just take their word for it. Thank you very much for joining us. Let's start with the Yankees and Mets that are going to play two games. By the way, how does Major League Baseball schedule these games? All four games as midweek games. None of them. Nothing on a weekend, but they are just two-game series. Yankees are 8 games ahead of the Blue Jays and Rays in the East, but they've dropped 14 of 18. Aaron Boone's losing his mind. Garrett Cole is coming out of the dugout when somebody accidentally hits Aaron Judge. What do you make of where the Yankees are mentally at this stage?
They're fine. I mean, I get all the theatrics. I mean, you probably, when you go through a schneid like they went through, you know, Boone's getting a bunch of pressure from above him, from Cashman, and, you know, Cashman's getting it from ownership, and so... Everybody's throwing it on, and then, you know, it's like any other organization where it ends up, you know, the lowest employee gets home and gets upset at their dog, right? It's that whole analogy. So, you know, standard stuff. They're going through a little bit of, you know, the dog days of August right now. Not too concerning. They look like they're still in a great position. They're going to be just fine, you know, especially because, you know, the Red Sox have been so disappointing. I mean, to the point where we're going to talk about how good the Orioles have been.
Yes.
Orioles aren't even supposed to win this year, Adam, but the Orioles are playing carefree. They're loose. They're having fun. Adley Rutschman's probably been one of the best additions to any team, including, you know, the Padres getting Juan Soto, the Mets, your favorite Mets, getting DeGrom back. Adley Rutschman has been every bit as important, if not more. And then Rougned Odor, somehow every time there's a highlight, is scoring a run or hitting a home run or something. So it's pretty impressive that they went through that reclamation project from the Rangers. You know, the Rangers are in the toilet with John Daniels getting fired. Chris Young's going to assume the leadership. So I think it's interesting that all these different things that are happening, and really the Blue Jays have been somewhat disappointing since firing Charlie. Be curious to see if they can limp into the playoffs or not, because the Mariners have an easy schedule the rest of the way at them. So I don't know what's going to end up happening. You know, and the Orioles, if they keep playing carefree, are going to be a great storyline down the stretch.
There are six teams in the American League fighting for three playoff spots. Whoever finishes second and third, because the White Sox are close too. So right now, I think Cleveland is in first place in the American League Central. Then you've got Minnesota and Chicago are in it. The Blue Jays, the Rays, and the Mariners. Those six teams, and the Orioles rather, those six teams are fighting for three playoff spots. You mentioned the Orioles. I know we have I know a lot of Orioles fans. I'm amazed they were not trying to win this year. They screwed up their own draft position for next year. But because some of their prospects are here, wouldn't it be really cool if they could somehow sneak in even as the last team just to get some of these guys a taste of it?
Yes, that would be I think it would be great. It'd be great for baseball. It'd be great for the American League East, of course, just to put some of those folks on notice that you can't disqualify anyone. You know, if you got a major league team, they're all still professionals. They're all still really good. I think it would be great. I think it would really upset, you know, potentially the Blue Jays, really upset potentially the Rays. You know, when's the last time the Rays have been on the outside looking in, you know, especially as of late? So, you know, I promise you they're creating a little bit of friction there. Wander Franco is going to be out for an extended period of time. So that hurts the Rays' chances, unfortunately, for them. They're going to have to try and piece together some things here in August and September, because right now the Orioles are hot, and I think they're going to stay that way.
Mets just went through an eight-game road trip through Atlanta and Philadelphia. Came out of that 4-4. That's not too terrible. You know, we're headed to the final 6 weeks of the season. They've only got these two with the Yankees, a three-game set with the Dodgers, and a three-game set in Atlanta. Everybody else, it looks like they play the Pirates and Reds only, and maybe the Nationals and Marlins. There's like nobody left on their schedule. What do you make of that type of a schedule the last 6 weeks of the season?
It matters. It's less taxing to your guys. It gives options to the front office, to the manager. If you need to kind of throttle down, you can. But, of course, it's not advisable yet. But later on in the season, it can be. I mean, the thing that stands out to me, I think that the Phillies are 5-14 against the Mets. So the Mets have already beat up all over the
Crushed
Phillies.
Them.
That's really what's hurt them. You know, losing 3 of 4 to the Braves, I think that's the first series that the Mets have lost this year. So that's something that's somewhat noteworthy of how much that they've been winning series. Because when you get in the playoffs, if you win every series the rest of the way, that's the only team that ends up standing at the end of the year.
Right.
So obviously the Mets are proving they can do that on a consistent basis, except for one blip against the Braves, which they're allowed over a full season. So the easier that the season is down the stretch, I mean, but you can imagine Showalter's been there before. Scherzer's been there before. They're going to make sure that they keep the pedal to the metal until somebody, probably Showalter, is going to say, hey, let's pull back the reins on these quarter horses for a little bit and make sure we keep the end goal in mind. So if they can go ahead and relax a little bit if they need to make sure they're ready for the stretch.
Elliot Johnson is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. I think the Mets lost one other series. I believe it was to Houston, who is sort of emerging maybe as the best team in the American League. Not sure. Albert Pujols, I can't believe that I am reading these numbers. In his last 28 games, .408 hitter, .829 slugging percentage, 9 home runs. In his last nine games, .556, 6 homers and 13 runs batted in. I thought he was done, Elliot.
I respect Bumgarner coming after him, don't you? You know, so like that's one thing you got to really respect. You know, you remember all the famous home runs that have happened, you know, throughout history, and how easy it would be for those guys to just go ahead and walk him, right? You know, he's closing in on 700. Are you gonna go ahead and pitch around him? Are you gonna be cute, or are you gonna go right after him? So I'll give Bumgarner credit for going right after him. I mean, it hurt him, of course, but. You know, still, he's going to go after everyone with his best stuff, which I really respect and appreciate. But, you know, Pujols still doing it at this at this point in his career is fascinating. I respect the heck out of it. And he's been one of the greatest hitters of my lifetime for sure. And one of the greatest hitters of all time. So he deserves all the respect in the world. I appreciate you bringing it up because he deserves more respect, not less, Adam.
It is like his career, his St. Louis Cardinals career alone, before he ever went to the Angels, he's a Hall of Famer for the first half of his career. End of discussion. So he was good with the Angels, and whatever happened with the Dodgers, whatever. He was good with the Angels, but his body was breaking down. And this resurgence after the All-Star game has just been remarkable. And you know me, I've said this before, I hate the Cardinals. I don't hate any other team of the Yankees, I do. But, I mean, I'm just amazed at what this guy's been able to do. Finally, in the three-team race for two wild-card spots, because the Braves pretty much have it locked up with like an eight-game advantage over the next team in the wild-card race. It's the Padres, it's the Brewers, and it's the Phillies. If it comes down to Padres, Brewers, there are multiple things going on here. One, they engineered a trade to get Josh Hader from Milwaukee to San Diego. Hader's been so bad with the Padres, they demoted him from closer. The Brewers pitching staff is bummed because they traded away their closer. What's going on here?
It's kind of interesting, isn't it? So, yeah. You know, Hader, and one last point on Pujols before we move on to the next segment, but Pujols showing in the Home Run Derby was a lot of fun. I don't think he expected to make it out of the first round. He
beat
Schwarber. And then, you know, I mean, it just made it a whole lot more fun for all of us that always had idolized Pujols through his career. So he's going to retire regardless, but, you know, much respect to him and his career. So Hader, I think everybody has that vision of what Hader is, who he could be for sure. But it seems like the Brewers are onto something, that they knew that he wasn't going to be the Hader of old that we had expected. So I think they had found an opportunity to offload him at the right time to a team that ends up being the make or break on if you know what's going to be the worst for the Padres is if the Brewers get in and the Padres get left out.
Yes.
That's going to be a double whammy. You know, heads are going to roll over in San Diego because that lineup is so amazing. So they're going to have to find ways to piece this together to get in. But once you're in, I mean, they've got a team that's good enough to win. I don't know if I see anybody beating the Dodgers. But again, you know, playoff baseball is playoff baseball. But the Dodgers have been so much better than everybody else. It's really hard for me to see anybody beating them right now.
Yeah, the Dodgers still have some question marks at the top of their starting rotation. Final thing. So we had the Fernando Tatis Jr. steroid announcement, 80 games. So it actually extends into next year. He wouldn't be eligible for any playoffs this year. Take me inside a locker room, if you can, when something like this happens and the dynamic between players.
Well, I mean, he is such a dumb idea altogether. He's already gotten paid. He's already one of the best players in the world. Now all he's done is just created question marks surrounding whether all of his production was legitimate or not. He's still one of the younger guys. Machado still, you know, is the leader clearly because he's been called upon a few times to help correct him in the past, and that's going to continue to happen. So he's got some maturity issues clearly. I don't understand the goal there. So, I mean, he's going to have to apologize to the team. He's going to have to apologize to everybody in person. He's not going to do it behind a press release or an agent release of any kind. I was part of the team when Manny in 2011 ended up coming up with something. So that, you know, we never saw him again. So what really he's going to have to do is call a team meeting, apologize to everyone like a man. Go to them face to face and own up to all these, you know, whatever he's done, because that team is infinitely better when he's on the field. I mean, let's be real.
Yep.
He's a dynamic lightning rod for any team. I don't care what team he's on. He makes everyone better, no matter where he is on the field. He's incredible. So he's going to have to do that. He's going to have to make amends. And then from here on out, he's going to have to play clean. So, you know, whatever that means, we'll see. But clearly he's got a long ways to go because, you know, the other thing that embarrasses him is when reporters have asked him about his motorcycle accidents, he answered, which one?
Yeah, the Padres can't be happy about that either. Elliot Johnson, you're the best, my friend. I appreciate your time, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Adam. Pleasure as always.
Elliot Johnson, 2-for-2 against Max Scherzer in his career. None of us, and no Wes Durham, who was on with us earlier, he isn't 2-for-2 lifetime against Max Scherzer.
Over the crossbar, and the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup.
June 19, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th anniversary wherever you get your podcast.
But it's time to continue our tour of NFL cities. We are just outside of 2 weeks until the NFL kicks off. Bills and Rams will start us 2 weeks from Thursday night. I don't know what the odds say. To me, the Bills are the best team in the league if the head coach has learned from some mistakes. Mm-hmm. Like allowing the Patriots to beat you in a 40-mile-an-hour wind, throwing it three times.
Yeah.
You allowed the Patriots to do that. And then whatever you did against Kansas City, when, what, Patrick Mahomes had like 13 seconds left after you took a lead and they needed a field goal. A, you kicked it through the end zone for a touchback.
Yep.
Wasted no time. And B, why did you rush anybody? Anybody.
Mm-hmm.
They rushed like four. Like, you're out of your mind.
Yeah.
Never mind. Sean McDermott, if he learns from his mistakes, the Bills are the best team in the NFL. All
yeah.
right, let's get right to our NFL city. We're going to Denver, right?
That's right. We are going
Talk
to Denver.
Talk to me.
So we're not going to Red Rock Theater. That's not actually in Denver.
No.
It's just outside Denver.
Yeah.
But it's not actually
believe
in
it's
Denver.
West of Denver.
It is. Just on the southwest side of Denver.
Yeah.
But not actually in it. And we're not going to Boulder. Boulder is not the same.
It's north of Denver.
It is. It is not the same as Denver.
Buddy of mine went to college. I'm sorry, didn't go to college there. He lived in Boulder. He acted like he went to college in Boulder.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Played lacrosse at Boulder.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
Very nice. I actually have a very good friend, a high school friend, who at last check was like one of the best volleyball coaches.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She was tremendous. Shouts to my friend Nancy Sorensen, if anybody knows her.
Shouts to Nancy.
Yep.
One thing you got to do while you're there in Denver, it's to eat at the original Chipotle right there on East Evans Avenue across
really?
From the University of Denver. That's where the original – I've actually eaten there.
Have you? Did
I
you
have.
Get food poisoning?
No, I did not.
Good.
Was I supposed to?
No.
Now I'm concerned.
No, you're fine.
Okay. Also, some other staple things you got to do while you're there. You got to drink Coors because, you know, the Rockies.
That's right.
Coors. You got to drink Coors and Coors Light.
Now – it's Miller Coors now, right? Doesn't Miller own Coors, or does Coors own Miller?
That's a great question.
I believe one of the one owns the other.
What is that? Anheuser-Busch that owns
it's
Budweiser.
InBev.
Yeah,
it's a Belgian company that owns Anheuser-Busch, I believe.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if there's another domestic beer that's with.
Well, Miller owns Pabst.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe. Anyway, so you got to drink some Coors, and then obviously you got to hoist the Stanley Cup because it's there.
Yes.
Yes, and drink out of the Stanley Cup, too.
Oh, wait, now it's Molson Coors.
Molson?
Gosh, who could keep track?
So it's Canadian.
Who could keep track?
So it's half Canadian now.
Yeah, who could keep track?
It's half Canadian. But yeah, go hoist the Stanley Cup. Can't lift it, you hoist it. You hoist the Stanley Cup, you got to drink Coors out of it. Or Molson out of it now, too. Actually, mix them both in there and enjoy yourself.
Nah, just drink the Molson.
Okay.
Molson's very good.
Well, no, we got to drink the local stuff.
Molson's very good. Well, Coors isn't local.
It's
mean, if you're
Colorado.
In Denver.
Yeah.
Yeah. Coors. Yeah. The old Coors High Test. It was all right.
Okay.
That was okay.
Can't say
I don't do the silver bullet, man.
Can't say I'm a fan.
I just drink a bottle of water, thanks.
That's fine. Hey, you can do that too. Stay hydrated. Oh, also, key thing when you're in Denver, stay hydrated.
Hydrate before you get there.
Hydrate a lot before you get there.
Yes.
And stay hydrated while you're there. Because low oxygen, high altitude. Need your water, folks.
No question.
You were saying there's a particular story.
Okay, Rio Grande Cafe, which is on Blake Street.
Right.
It's in an old warehouse. An absolutely phenomenal place to spend an afternoon. They have incredible margaritas. Their signature drink is a margarita, not a frozen margarita. Mm-hmm. This is a clear gold margarita.
Okay.
It comes in like a giant, like it's almost like a champagne glass, not a flute, but it's huge. And they say on the walls, there's signs all over the Rio Grande Cafe, on the walls, 3 margarita limit. Okay?
Three
margarita limit.
Okay.
And theoretically, they are keeping track. And I went. I was out there. It was the first day I was out there. I had hydrated. I was aware. It wasn't my first time being out there.
Okay.
It was my second or third time being out there. So I drank my first one, my second, my third. I was fine. 3 margaritas in. We were there for a while. And I thought, let me go for a fourth. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you that I think they know. And on the fourth margarita, they put a sledgehammer in it.
A sledgehammer?
I don't know. It just rocked.
Okay.
Me. So, yes. But clear, gold, beautiful. Great margaritas.
Okay.
Rio Grande Cafe. Shouts to, I hope it's still open. Who knows? Who knows what the pandemic did to everybody, but Rio Grande Cafe is a very cool thing. But that area of Denver, downtown Denver, Blake Street, where the ballpark is just tremendous.
Apparently it's still open. Close at 10 o'clock tonight.
All right, let's go.
There you go. Rio Grande.
Rio Grande Cafe.
Right there in Denver.
Yeah, I can't tell you what happened afterward because I don't really remember it.
That's fine. Well, you got hit with the sledgehammer.
Yep. I swear, I was fine. Absolutely fine.
You had another place in Denver that you mentioned too?
No, I'm sure.
Oh.
I don't remember it.
That's fair.
I think there was a restaurant across the street.
All right.
But I don't really remember eating there.
Okay. Well, after your third margarita from Rio Grande.
I could have done anything after the third one.
I'm sure.
By the way, at Coors Field, we went to a Rockies game. I don't remember they played. They sell something in Coors Field that they don't sell anywhere else called Coors Red Light, which was sort of an amber Coors, and it was really good.
Really?
Yes. Very good. But
I'm an amber ale. That's my go-to type
of
beer.
Yeah, me too.
So
me too.
The fact that they don't sell that anywhere, what's the deal?
My first trip to Denver, we weren't in Denver. We were in Breckenridge, Colorado, which is why this doesn't really pertain. But my first trip there was we went to a place where New Belgium is actually brewed.
Yes.
Right? I had a fat tire.
Yes.
First time I ever had a fat tire was in Breckenridge, Colorado, and I went, this is a beer. One of my all-time favorite. Oh, still one of my 5 favorite beers of all time.
It's top one for me, for sure.
Yeah, fat tire is tremendous.
Also, while you're there, make sure you check out the Forney Museum of Transportation. So you get planes, trains, automobiles, motorcycles, the whole deal to check out while you're out there in Colorado.
Like
also, you mentioned Coors Field. The National Ballpark Museum is in Denver, Colorado.
Really?
Yes. So you have different memorabilia and different items and stuff for you to check out about all these great ballparks from here in the U.S. So, yeah, they have like turnstiles and stuff from old ballparks and everything, too. So if you're a baseball fan.
Turnstiles.
Yes, exactly.
Those
turnstiles.
Those do not exist. Those don't even exist on the subway anymore. Actually, they might.
On the subway,
in New York
they
City, they probably they do.
They do. I was up there for HC tournament. They still have those.
Gosh.
But, yeah, the old turnstiles, they have those. It's really – so if you're a baseball fan or a sports fan, the National Ballpark Museum is pretty cool checking out. Obviously, being in Denver, being outdoors is a good place – it's a good place to be outdoors.
Sure.
The Botanical Gardens are a nice place to visit. Also, I recommend the Museum of Nature and Science. I recommend that as well. But a great restaurant spot to go to, it's a place called Number 38. So Colorado being the 38th state in the union, there's a large outdoor venue. I'm pretty sure this is like Tom Dundon's dream of what he wants to do over there. So they have bands that come in and play, both local and national bands. There's outdoor movie screens. There's a sand volleyball courts, tap rooms, all kinds of stuff. But it's an 18,000 square foot patio packed with tables, chairs, cup holders, the concert spot. 18,000 square foot.
Nice.
It's huge.
Yeah.
Right there in Denver.
Excellent.
I definitely highly recommend.
It's a great city.
It really is.
It is a great city.
But also make sure you stop and get some donuts at City Donuts.
City Donuts.
City Donuts is the place to go to for donuts. They have raised donuts. They do cake donuts, old fashions as well. And they also get fancy a little bit too. Plus, you can get breakfast sandwiches while you're there too.
I like that.
Yeah.
Give me a good breakfast sandwich.
I'm like, give me a sausage, egg, and cheese, and I'll take two donuts.
You gone to Rise here in Raleigh?
Of course. Which one?
Ooh, ooh. Well, there's the one on Falls of the Noose Road in North Raleigh.
Well, there's that one.
That's on my way in.
Okay, well, there's that one. There's the one in the Village District. Durham has one.
If I'm getting my car worked on, sometimes I'm like, I'm drawn. I have to go there first.
I don't blame you.
Yeah.
It's a good spot.
It's a bad calorie morning when we're when you're stopping at Rise Donuts.
It's a great calorie morning.
It all depends on your perspective. All depends on your perspective. All right, we've ticked off another NFL city. Where are we going tomorrow?
Yes, we have. Tomorrow, our next on our list is we're going to Arlington, Texas.
By the way, there's a bowling connection to Arlington we're going to have to hit on tomorrow.
A bowling
connection to Arlington. And where are we headed the day after? Do you have your Dunkin' Donuts
Let's
cup?
Let's see. I do have my Dunkin' Donuts cup. Let's see. We will eventually go to Charlotte on this tour, by the way.
We haven't been to Charlotte yet.
Not yet. We're going to Atlanta, the Falcons.
All right.
Oh, Atlanta's going to be fun.
Oh, it's going to be. Let's not go to the varsity.
No,
let's not go to the varsity.
Let's get some Lou Williams lemon pepper wings.
Yes, exactly.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Over the crossbar, and the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup.
June 19th, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.